Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 36, newly married, and all I keep hearing is, aren't you broody yet? Or, still not pregnant? Or, it's the best thing you'll do, you know? Yeah, I do know. Thanks. But what I don't know is if I actually want a baby. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network where I speak to new mums, non-mums, baby wanters, baby rejectors to figure out whether to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I speak to Becky, who has quite a story to tell.
I was pushed back on a bed and they were running down a corridor and a woman kept shouting to me, stay with us, stay with us. And I was thinking, well, this does not sound good.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla.
Hello.
Are you finishing McFlurry now?
I might have to have another spoon in a minute in between and hear me just crunching in the background.
Now, we come to you on quite an emotional day. Yeah. Because it's just been Chester's first birthday, which should be a cause for celebration, not tears.
No, it is, like, it's good tears. I don't know how to describe it. I just feel emotional because the memories came up today of, like, the announcement of his birth and the first little picture of him holding my face. And, yeah, percentage-wise, looking at baby number two goes sky high when baby turns one. And someone told me this would happen.
Yeah, you did say that your friend Emma, one of her mates, said this is the danger zone for having a second kid.
Because you go, oh, my baby's not really a baby anymore.
But you know what I think is weird about that is it's almost like, imagine you have an ex-boyfriend who you really loved but was a bit of a dick to you, and then you would want to go back to that. You wouldn't. Why do you want to go back to the baby phase? Because, don't get me wrong, Chester was amazing, but also, that was brutal when he was tiny.
I can't believe you just compared it to an ex-boyfriend that was a dick.
Do you know what
I mean? I do know what you mean. And I said to Mum this morning, actually, I'd much prefer now this phase, but it still doesn't stop you feeling emotional when you look at how tiny he was. And it was the first time that you saw... The first time ever I saw your face. Yeah, so I don't know how to describe it.
You'll just have to get me to have one.
Yep, and then you'll know, because in a year's time, you'll look at the photos and go,
no.
Yeah, you were a bit of a dick, but...
First off, Becky, tell me, in your words, your parental situation.
Oh, right. That's a good one. I have a 3-year-old, nearly 4-year-old little girl called Matilda. I have twin boys, Bobby and Jesse. But we lost Jesse at 5 days old. So I have 3 children, 2 at home. That's how I describe it.
And I hate it. Even before I knew that I was doing this interview with you, I'm like, oh God, it's going to make me so emotional and I'm due on my period and everything. But first off, so talk to me first about Matilda, your pregnancy with Matilda and how all that kind of was.
Absolute dream. Absolutely fine. Not a problem. Not even really. I was one of those really annoying pregnant people. Not a problem. Not even really sick. Nothing. Trotted along. I had a couple of times where I went to the hospital because I didn't feel her moving very much. But that was more me being obsessive. And we had a lovely hospital who didn't care, which was good. So I went there a few times. And then on the day before her due date, I hadn't felt her very much. So I went in. They found her straight away, obviously, because as soon as they put things on, they start dancing like you're lying. So she did that. But then the lovely doctor came in and said, you're due tomorrow. You've been in a couple of times because you've not felt so much. So we're just going to induce you. Just may as well get her out. In all honesty, I don't think it was very busy that day.
Okay.
And I honestly thought they went, okay, let me just get her out. Let's get this one in and out. So yeah, I was induced that night, Sunday, and she arrived on the leap year. 29th of February.
Oh.
I know, which was my due date. And I spent the whole time going, it's fine. No baby's come on their due date. It's fine.
So, wait, how do you celebrate her birthday the rest of the year?
So either the 28th or the 1st okay. of March. At the minute, it doesn't really matter. I'll let her pick when she's older, because half of our family think it should be the 28th of February, because that's February and she was born in February.
Yeah.
Whereas half think she wasn't born on the 28th, she was born the day after the 28th, which is the 1st of March. She has about 12 birthdays now, obviously, for the last 3 years. But so this year coming up will be her first... Her first birthday.
Oh,
yeah.
Her first real birthday.
Her first real one.
Oh.
So, yeah, and then along she came and she was a little love.
If you don't mind me asking, how was the conceiving part? Was it fairly easy?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So not only are you the envy of all pregnant women, but you're the envy
For Matilda, of... it was, we didn't really even think about it. She just...
Surprise.
Along she came, yeah. We'd actually, because we were like, oh, well, maybe we'll start trying just before we get married, and then hopefully it'll take a while, so we'll be married a bit, and then it will happen. And I was pregnant on my wedding day. I didn't mind, but I mean, I just expected a longer time than that.
Yeah.
But it worked out lovely.
So then fast forward to twins.
Yes.
So how was that?
So they took ages. Because I went in quite cocky at that time. Oh, well, I want one now, so I'll just have one now. Because that's what happens for us. And that did not happen. Because life does that to you, doesn't it? Yeah. But it was fine. We didn't have any big dramas or anything like that. It just took a longer amount of time. So I think it was about 18 months, maybe a bit longer, that we were trying for the boys. Because we started crying quite soon after having Matilda, really. I wanted an army straight away. I really liked it. So... it took ages, and then we went on holiday and I took a test and it was positive. Rob's out the room, because I was with Matilda while she had a nap, and Rob had like gone off to the beach or something for half an hour while Matilda had a big nap. And when he came back in, I said, I'm sure it's twins though. So just get that in your head, because then it's not a...
Why did you think that?
I don't know. I felt ill, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
I felt awful. I just felt... It felt so different, which I know they can do anyway, so it was just fluke. I mean, 9 times out of 10, I would have said this and it wasn't twins. But yeah, it just felt so different immediately. I just felt like there was two of them.
Are there twins in your family?
No, my brother had twins the same year we did.
Oh my God.
But that's obviously, ours were non-identical twins. Theirs were identical twins. It runs in the female side anyway, so it doesn't make any difference. But he had them in the April. He lives in Australia.
Crikey.
Yeah.
So the grandparents got a real influx of babies.
Honestly, my dad didn't speak for a lot. He just kept mowing the grass. Like, that's not even a joke. He just didn't know what to say to any of us. So we went for an early scan when we got back, because I was so convinced. It was like a private scan, obviously, to get it so early. And she said, yeah, well, there's two in there. And I was like, told you. And then she went, oh, sorry. I can't decide if this is a third. We were like, I'm sorry, no, there's two. I predicted this and there is two.
Yes.
And she said, no, I can't tell, but like, because it's a private scan, I can't do like an internal scan like they would normally do at the hospital, so I'm just gonna have to go home. So I left having a nervous breakdown, because I just wanted to know either way at this point.
You did say you wanted an army.
I know, it's my own fault, wasn't it? So I rang the early pregnancy unit at our local hospital, like hysterical, you know, like somebody needs to see me and tell me what's going on, blah, blah, blah. They were like, well, your midwife can make an appointment. I was like, I don't have a midwife, like, it's too early, like, I've not seen anybody. Anyway, this lady went off and spoke to, obviously, a lovely doctor who said, just tell her to come in tomorrow morning. So I went in the next morning. The lady said, I have no idea why this woman thought she could see three.
There's two babies.
Which Rob says they should do on the NHS, because... He said, by the time somebody's going to you, you might have three. When they go, there's two. You're like, fine.
Yeah.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all. Whereas when they first said two, he was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Two. So he thinks it should be a tactic that they employ.
Camilla, so you have been looking into the odds of having twins.
Not for myself, but yes, I have. It's just over 1% of pregnancies result in twins, so not a lot.
So what are the odds then of two siblings having twins at the exact same time when there is no history of twins in the family?
Hang on, let me just do my calculations. I have sweet FA to tell you. I don't know, like, must be minuscule.
In other news, I have just read that women who are taller than average are more likely to have twins.
That's worrying for me if I do decide to have another.
Yeah, because you're a flipping giant.
You're pretty tall as well, though.
This is true.
We're both above average, I would say.
And I'm old. And it says here as well, if you're old.
We're both quite old.
Oh, bring on the twins.
So when they say to you, oh, yeah, you're pregnant with twins, you know, do they, because I keep saying in the podcast, oh, I'd love twins. Just get two, get
That's
it done.
That's what I was like, yeah.
Get it done. And so many people have said to me, oh, my God, but the complications of having twins. So do they, did the doctors talk to you about that?
Well, they did in that, obviously, you have a consultant. I didn't have a consultant with Matilda because I was just a low risk, normal pregnancy. And I think because they're keeping such a close eye on you, you don't have to think about it. Well, that's how I felt anyway. I didn't really have to think about any of the complicated bits because they were doing that for me. And there was no reason that mine would have been any more complicated because, like I say, there were just two babies with everything they needed separately, but in the same stomach. And whether it would be natural birth or cesarean, but that was all, we'll just see, what it's like when we get there. So it was, I think I was a bit naive to the complications of twins because I didn't really feel like I had to worry.
Yeah. And I suppose if the doctors are monitoring you so closely and they're not saying to you, hey, you need to worry about anything, then why are you going to worry?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So you said you were going to kind of let fate take its course and see what the childbirth thing was going to look like. So then what did it look like?
Well, I mean, I say that, by the way. I fully intended on getting a cesarean if I possibly could. The idea of pushing out two absolutely backfired me. But for the purposes of that, I never had to make the decision. I can go now, maybe I would have done it naturally.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would. I got to 32 weeks, had a consultant appointment at 32 weeks and a scan. I had really bad pain in my back. And I'd not really had any aches or pains or niggles or anything all the way through the pregnancy. But they're kind of just like, just because you're getting bigger, like, you're really big now. So it's just your frame isn't built to carry that.
That's your delicate little flower. Like you carrying two
really
whole babies.
Not a delicate little flower. That would have been the last way you would have described me. So, they weren't really worried about it. And I could feel them all the time. So I wasn't worried about it. But I was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Just as I hit 32 weeks, which was the Thursday. Well, everything came back on my scan fine. Nobody had any worries. And then I went home, and then the Friday, I just didn't get out of bed. I was working, but I just worked from home, in bed, didn't move, cried a lot because it really, really hurt. And then on the Saturday morning, I woke up, and it was just still there. I hadn't slept. I couldn't lie down. It was just, I couldn't describe what it was like because I kept saying, I'm not worried about I'm in labour because it's not labour pains. And I'm not worried about the babies because I can feel them nonstop. I just don't understand why it hurts so much.
Yeah.
So I rang the unit again on Saturday morning and was like, I don't know what you can do for me, but like I can't breathe. It hurts so much. And she said, well, just come in because we can at least try and give you some painkillers, like some really good painkillers. So Robert took Matilda swimming. When he came home, he took me down to the unit with Matilda and we just sat there for a minute in the same bit where you go to like have a trace if you're worried about babies not moving, etc. Matilda was playing with a birthing ball. There was these women panting and things. And I was like, this is not the place for a 2.5-year-old. So I was like, Rob, they're going to put me on a trace. They're going to see the babies are fine. They're going to give me some painkillers. And then they're going to send me home. So just take her away from it before she gets thrown out. And then I'll ring you when they tell me that you can come and get me. So they did the trace. All was fine. But I was still like just crying on a bed. So the woman said, I'm just going to get someone else to come and look at you because I just don't get it. I just really don't get it. I was laying in bed and a consultant lady came to see me. And all of a sudden, everything just went wild. They were saying that everything was fine. Couldn't see any problems. I was about to be sent home. And then all the machines started beeping. I felt funny. Like I didn't really feel like I was there. And then I was pushed back on a bed and they were running down a corridor. And a woman kept shouting to me, stay with us, stay with us. And I was thinking, well, this does not sound good.
No.
Like, genuinely.
Even
you
in
feel
your,
like, not
delirious.
In there. Yeah, I just kept thinking, this just doesn't feel like what I expected was about to happen. And then they rushed me into theatre and they were saying, do you understand we're going to have to get them out? And I was like, no, but do it.
Yeah.
So at this point, Rob isn't there.
Rob's not there. Rob's gone. Rob's hoovering the car with Matilda. Matilda's sat in the front seat with the radio on. So when I got into the theatre, they said the baby's heart rate's disappeared completely. We need to get them out. We're going to give you general anaesthetic.
I'm amazed that you remember this, by the way.
And I think I've relived it a lot.
Yeah.
So then they started to put the mask over me, but I'm awful with masks, so I kept pushing it away. And then they said, oh, the baby's heartbeat's there now. So actually, we could just do this with an epidural or whatever. Yeah. Whatever they do, where they knock you.
Like a spinal block.
Yeah, spinal block.
Yeah.
So I said, right, do that. Because I kept thinking, well, they're not there anymore. And I'm not going to sleep and waking up and being told by somebody else that they're not there. Like, yeah. I need to be awake.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, well, somebody rang Rob. And they kept saying, ringing Rob isn't the important thing to do here. And yeah. I was like, oh, God. Yeah. This is quite serious, isn't it? So then they got them out and they were fine. but they weren't fine. But so they got in there and they saw that I'd had placental abruption, which is basically where I think the placenta abrupts. So it on twin one, which is Bobby, it had been bleeding out rather than looking after him. But normally you would bleed. Like, that's how you would know. I would have gone to the doctors and said, this is happening. Yeah. It wasn't. It was just doing it inside. So there was no clue at all to anybody that it was there. So they got them out. It felt a lot more long-winded than that, but they got them out eventually. They took them over. I had a lovely lady next to me, went and took a picture of them and said, they're going to the neonatal unit, but they're okay. Like, they're here. They're fine.
And so at that point, had you presumably, like, you're almost preparing yourself that they're telling you there's not a heartbeat, that they're not going to be there.
I 100% did not. All I kept thinking was, do not put me under general anaesthetic because you're not telling me that my babies have died.
Yeah.
I will find that out myself. Like, I will know if they cry, or I will know by people rushing. You're not putting me to sleep. That's all I could think at the time. I remember thinking, I'm not going to sleep. You can blow her off. I'm not putting the mask on my face.
Yeah.
So, which is ridiculous. No, but obviously in the mindset, I was like, this is the most important thing. I'm not going to sleep. Like, you're idiots if you think I'm going to sleep. So luckily they agreed to that. So I heard them cry. They got whisked to the other side of the room. Somebody went and took a picture. Like, they had little masks on and hats on. And then they were just taken out in little incubators past me. At this point, they'd rang Rob. So Rob arrived. I don't know how much longer after all this was. And we just told that they were in the neonatal unit and they were okay. Like, they'd had to have a little bit of help with breathing, but nothing that you would be worried about.
Nothing out of the ordinary for early babies.
Exactly that. They weighed £4 each-ish, which again, for 8 weeks early, not a bad weight. And it was like the middle of the night that I got to go down and see them in the neonatal unit.
So how long after having them did you get to see them?
They were born at 4 p.m. I think I saw them about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
So quite a while.
Yeah.
I remember a really nice lady came to see me to say, they brought me a picture of each of them. She was like, they're doing really well, doing everything we'd want them to do. Like, there's no concerns whatsoever. I just want you to remember that this journey is one step forward and two step backs. I want you to keep that in your head at all times.
Yeah.
Which I'm really grateful she said, because I did keep that in my head at all times.
Yeah.
So on the Sunday, went to see them again. Matilda came to see them. Very fond.
I was going to say, what was that like?
Oh, she wanted them all. She was like, is that one? Is that one my brother too? At all. And we were like, no, just these two. And she's like, okay. Why is that one not my brother? And we were like, oh, she's going to take them all home and check her handbag as we leave. And it felt quite normal at that point, as much as we were in the neonatal unit. I was discharged on the Monday, released from prison of hospital. No, so they were born on Saturday afternoon. I was allowed to go on the Monday. And then on the Tuesday night, we went in and we went quite late because there was only four babies as well in the room we were in at that point. Our two and another two little twin boys. It felt really lovely. And then we went in on the Wednesday morning, I think it was, and they were doing this thing where they kept stopping breathing, which sounds really dramatic, but it didn't feel it at the time because they kept saying, baby's this little and stuff, they forget to breathe. Mm-hmm. Like, they just need a little waft of the mask or something like that, or a little tickle on the cheek, and they'll kickstart again. And they'd done it a couple of times the days before, but they were doing it like it was one after the other, back to the other, back to the other, back to the other. And they were doing it constantly on Wednesday morning. And in the end, the nurse was like, I'm just going to get another person to come in and have a look because they're doing it too much now. So somebody came in and said, we're just going to move them back into the other room. I think they just need a bit more help with the breathing. And we don't know why. So they moved them back into the...
Which I feel like is the epitome of that nurse saying to you, one step forward, two steps
100%.
Back.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. So they went back into the other room. Rob came back. And then they didn't really improve on the Wednesday. And by the Thursday, they said, we think it might be something called NEC, which is like some problem with the bowel, infection in the bowel. We're going to need to transfer them to another hospital. So they rang this, it's Embrace who move them all with their ambulances. And they're the kind of people who facilitate finding where they can go. And there was nowhere that could take two babies because they were all full. So they said, Jessie can go to Leeds. We've got a spot in Leeds for Jessie. And then the Embrace team arrived for Bobby and nobody still knew where Bobby was going. And this was on the Thursday afternoon. And then they said, it looks like Bobby's going to Wolverhampton. So,
what the?
I know.
I can't. Well, the thought of even separating them anyway when they're twins feels like the wrong thing to do.
I didn't care about that at the time.
Really?
I was like, it's any way you want. And they were all mortified at the idea of taking apart. They really didn't want to. Which I think, if they hadn't have been like that, I would have been a bit more like, oh, you know, why are you doing it? But they really didn't want to separate them.
Yeah.
But they also knew they needed to move them.
Yeah.
But then, so the whole team were there ready to move Bobby into his little, they look like spaceships, the incubators they move them in because they're so...
High kit.
Yeah, they really do look like spaceships. So Jessie was in his and he was about to go to the ambulance and Rob had said he'll have to go to Wolverhampton because I couldn't drive because I'd had the cesarean. My dad could get me to Leeds. My mum could stay at home with Matilda. And I knew we knew it was serious at that point because I remember Rob saying, if anything happens, it's going to be to Jessie. Are you all right? And we were like, well, we've just got to be, haven't we? Like, you can't just leave Bobby in case anything happens to Jessie because Jessie might be fine and Bobby might get there. And
why at that stage did you think that it was going to be something with Jessie?
Jessie's arm had started to go black.
Okay.
Which is, it wasn't that much of a key point until that afternoon. Nobody'd really noticed it. Not in a bad way. It was just because they were so, like, the skin wasn't, it was a bit mottly anyway. And it was a bit, and they were worried about having to amputate the arm. Because again, it just felt like there was an infection somewhere and the blood just wasn't moving through. They were doing the thing where you press the skin to see how quickly it goes back to normal and it just was taking forever. They were counting for ages and it was taking ages. So they knew that the blood wasn't flowing correctly through anywhere. And Bobby was kind of not at that point yet, but they were following each other all the time. Mm-hmm. So they were watching one because you knew the other would have the exact same thing any minute. Yeah. So then somebody came back in and said, you know what, we're just going to move Jessie and we'll leave Bobby here because I think he just had an x-ray come back, he just had some bloods come back and his was slightly on the better side.
Okay.
So we'll just keep him here a bit longer, which I will always be so grateful for. So we went to Leeds, met Jessie's consultant there, saw Jessie there. The lady who'd been in the ambulance with him had really wanted to try this thing, like a little patch she put on one of his veins that was supposed to open it to help with the flow to his arm because she was just like, I'm just really worried. We're going to lose his arm. And I remember thinking, I don't care. Lose his arm.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. If that's the worst that comes out of this, we're good.
Yeah.
Like, we're fine with that. But she was like, I really think it'll make a difference. And if you're happy for me to try it, I'll try it. And we were like, try whatever. So by the time we got to Leeds, his arm had improved a bit. He seemed quite steady. So they were like, go home, have a sleep, see how you get on. My dad had been with Bobby in Halifax. He was like, Bobby's fine. Like, they're all right with Bobby now. I remember we felt quite like celebratory when we went home that night because of the arm. Like, there'd been such an improvement and that had been such a focus for everybody that afternoon out of nowhere that we were like, everyone's all right. And then in the middle of the night on the Thursday, Rob's phone rang and Rob stood at the end of the bed and he said, okay, yeah, we'll come straight away. And he got off the phone and he said, we're going to have to go now. He's not very well. Thinking I'd seen the screen, which I hadn't. And I was like, okay, right, how long will it take to get us now? And he was like, only 10 minutes at this time. I was like, 10 minutes to leave? And he was like, no, Bobby. I was like, what? Bobby's fine. Bobby's not the worry at the minute. Yeah. And he was like, no, Bobby's, his blood pressure keeps going. Honestly, little boys. This is what they do.
I feel like, even when you're
sorry,
I tell this in my mouth. I'm like, oh, sorry. Good.
So we went down, and by the time we got there, which again wasn't very long, they were like, it seems like, again, he's lifting himself up again. His blood pressure just kept dropping, like, ridiculously low. But he seems like he's a bit better, but we're going to move him. He needs to be somewhere else. He is not the right place for him. So they'd rang Embrace. Embrace were there, and they were trying to figure out, they were on the phone, trying to find out where he was going to go. As they were doing this, my phone rang and it was my mum, and she said, "Leeds are trying to ring me, they can't get hold of you," because we didn't have any signal in the Skiboo at Calderdale. Oh, and they said, "You need to come now. He's not very well." So we just had to leave Bobby. They were like, "We'll let you know where he goes, like everything's fine." All the nurses were really upset as we were leaving. I remember thinking, why are they upset? What do they know?
Yeah.
So we left, drove to Leeds, and they'd had to resuscitate Jesse, and it had taken 18 minutes, I think, to get him back. So they were like, "He's back. It worked. So, but you need to be here."
Yeah.
And then as we were kind of sat there at the first bit, he went again, and they started resuscitating him again, and they moved us out of the room. And they got him back, I think it took about 10 minutes. They got him back, and we went in, and we were sat next to him. And we were there for quite a while at that time. We were there for a good, I don't even know, maybe a couple of hours. And it happened that time, and then he was fine, and then it happened again. And his consultant had been called in, and he came into the room and said, "You know, if it happens again, we're going to have a chat about what you want us to do."
Yeah.
And at that point, it sounds awful, I always think, when I say it. We were both just like, do nothing, leave him alone. Because, like, if you've seen resuscitation at any point, like on a baby, it's horrible. You're just like, just leave him alone. Like, it's not fair now. And I remember Rob saying, "I don't understand the machines, but I can see that what you're giving him is perking him up. He's not doing it by himself. Like, he doesn't want to."
Yeah.
"You're doing it for him. If he doesn't want to do it, just don't make him." So we went back in and we stood there not for very long, and he did it again. So they just took him off all the machines and gave him. I'm usually really good at not.
No, it's probably because you can see me, because I'm like, not keeping my shit together here either.
No, so.
Oh my God.
They took him off all the machines, they gave him to us, just the literal witch chair in front of us. There'd been so many nurses around him doing every time he had to be resuscitated. There were so many of them. They were all so upset. They all left us out of the room, put screen around us. Nobody was there, obviously, because it was about 7 o'clock in the morning by this point.
Yeah.
And we just held him. And then after a while, they kind of filtered back in. And then they moved us into a separate room where we could just sit with him for a while. And that's where we kind of had to ring people. And they gave us lots of lovely options to do in there. They were kind of saying, "You can give him a bath, you can do this, blah, blah." We didn't want to do any of it because on the night before, Matilda had come into the hospital with us, and she'd sat next to the thing, and she couldn't read. She was 2 and a half. She thought she could read. So she had a book, a Winnie the Pooh book, and she sat there and she said, "It's a red, red polar bear." And he really reacted to everything she'd done, Jesse especially. And we had like loads of little videos of this, and I kept saying, "I want that to be my last memory. Like, I don't want to remember giving him a bath afterwards," because we were very lucky to have had 5 days where we thought he was coming home, where we'd had cuddles, Matilda had been there. I didn't want to replace them with memories afterwards.
Yeah.
So we did like a few footprint things, and somebody had come in to tell us that Bobby was going to Bradford at some point.
A bit closer than Wolverhampton.
Exactly. So, and he was okay. So they'd let us know when he was there. I rang my mum and dad, obviously let them know what they were doing. They were taking Matilda to the nursery. They went straight to Bradford so that they were meeting Bobby there. So somebody was with Bobby.
Yeah.
So we stayed there for a little while. And then we had to leave and go to Bradford to see Bobby. And then Bobby went through some ups and downs, because we thought we were going to Bradford for exactly the same thing. But he just fought it. He did it. Which I do think is because his brother paved the way in a way for him.
Yeah.
I think he taught them a lot of what, I mean, he was on antibiotics and everything like that, but I think once they could kind of put more of a thing on what happened, it definitely helped Bobby's health.
Yeah.
And everything they did for him there.
God. That is, I can't, I'm amazed at how, A, you remember all the detail of it, because so much happened in such a short space of time that must have been, like, I can't imagine what your emotions, like, what your mind and your body even goes through when all that stuff's happening. So the fact that, A, you can remember it, and B, you can talk about it is amazing. But
it sounds weird to say it, but I like to tell the story because I don't, like, it's talking about Jesse. And I would talk about Jesse all day long.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell people are just like, oh, for God's sake, this makes me really uncomfortable. Stop it. But that is more like a challenge. I'm like, oh, it's making you uncomfortable, is it? We'll talk about it more. And I think it's not a blessing at all, but the fact that me and Rob had to get in the car every day and go to Bradford, and we were going backwards and forwards, we had to talk to each other. We didn't have a choice of talking to each other in the car. So we went over everything a lot with each other, which I think is the bit that is a blessing, rather than being able to go home and go, okay, let's just
lay and then in bed try and
forget
yeah.
that this has all happened
yeah.
and cry and be upset for ourselves. We couldn't, like, we had to get up at whatever time and be at the hospital because you didn't know what was going to happen that day.
So how old is Bobby now?
17 months nearly.
And how is he?
He's good, yeah. He's not walking yet, but I think that's more laziness than that. I know you've got to give him his 8 weeks that he was early and things, but part of me thinks he just doesn't want to.
Yeah.
But he's done really well. He's obviously always been a little bit behind everything else, as he should be,
yeah.
because he was born when he shouldn't have been born.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does really well.
How did you deal with telling Matilda or explaining it to her?
She single-handedly did it all. So the day, was it a Friday? I think it might have been the day after. It was the Saturday. So we didn't really see her on the Friday night because we were at the hospital so late again because Bobby was so poorly. And on the Saturday, I think Mum and Dad met us at Bradford Hospital so that they could sit there for a while and we could take Matilda straight out.
Yeah.
We didn't really want to see him at that point because he looked really, really unwell. He didn't look like the baby she'd seen before.
Yeah.
He was like on a ventilator. So he'd been, something was breathing for him. Like, it wasn't nice. But we took her straight out and we were like, well, we'll have to do something nice. So we'll go to White Rose Shopping Centre and we'll get a Build-A-Bear. And we'll let her pick a Build-A-Bear. Because you do just...
Build-A-Bear, the answer
yeah,
to so many.
Exactly. I don't even like the place. So we went there and in the car on the way, we kind of just started saying, you know, Jesse's not there anymore. I think we must have said something about he's had to go up to the sky. And she went, oh, so he's gone to live on the moon. And we went, yeah, if you want to live on the moon, yeah. That's, like, if that's the way you're going with this, that's fine. We're like, he was really, really poorly. Usually doctors can make anything better because as well, you're like, oh God, I don't want to put the fear of God into her. But he was just, because he was born so early, blah, 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 they just couldn't do it. And she was like, okay, well, is he better now? He's on the moon. We're like, yeah, well, that's the point, he is. And she was like, all right, okay. Well, I want him to be on the moon then. We were like, oh, God, why can, like, a nearly three-year-old do this and adults can't? Because, you know, like, you're trying to... And she's the same now, like nobody wants to talk about death. We're terrible about it in England, aren't we? We are the worst ever. Yet it's just... She can just say it. Like, she just gets it all. So she was like, right, well, okay, well, that's fine. I'm going to miss him. Mm. Like, and she was saying all this. She was like, I'm going to miss him, but... I don't want him to be poorly. Like, so if he's supposed to be on the moon, he's supposed to be on the moon. So we went to Build-A-Bear and she got a teddy off him. So we said, Jesse's told us to come and bring you for a teddy.
Oh.
So at this point, she's like, right, well, he is my favourite.
He's the best, yeah.
Yeah. And we got Bobby a teddy. Yeah, exactly. We got Bobby a teddy off Jesse. We're like, but we'll still, you know, just talk about him all the time. Still your brother, blah, blah, blah. She was like, yeah, fine, okay, whatever. Yeah, that's great. And then she kept it up, like she would talk about it all the time, and she's just, even now, she is without doubt the best person at it all ever. Like, she's taught us how to do it.
Yeah.
Like, she will have full conversations with the moon if she sees it in the sky. Oh. She brings him into everything. She will not, you know, if somebody says to her, like a grandparent will say, oh, is this off like a present? They'll be like, is this off you and Bobby? She was like, and Jesse.
Oh.
Like, she will not have him left out of anything.
That's so nice. That must be like a real extra bonus comfort for you as well.
I don't know what we would have done without her. I don't think we would have done it as well or managed without her. Because you can't sit and wallow with a 2.5-year-old. You just can't.
Yeah.
Because they're doing a show. She's Elsa. you know, and then she'll bring it straight back and bring it back to Jesse. You can't really do it. She's been a little godsend.
Yeah.
As annoying as she can be.
Oh, that's so nice, though. That's like, what a wonderful thing to come out of something so terrible.
Yeah, that's it. Which is all we ever want. From the very second we were sat in the room with him, I remember saying when we were ringing people, tell them not to cry. Tell them not to cry because I don't want them to just cry about him.
Mm.
It was my biggest nightmare that anybody would hear his name and cry. Yeah. Or like they would think about him and just cry. So I was like, we had 5 days of him, and like, that's not it. He's still going to give us stuff forever.
Yeah.
So I just felt it was such a waste if everybody just, I was really like, I was quite forceful about it at the time. Like, yeah. Do not cry. Nobody can cry. Nobody's allowed to cry in front of Matilda. I kept saying as well, nobody's allowed to cry in front of Matilda because I don't want that to be for her. Oh yeah, I remember that time.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember it because I was too little, but I know everyone cried a lot and everyone was really sad, and it was a bit rubbish for me because everyone was sad all the time.
Yeah.
So it was just straight away we were like, it can only good things can come from him. That was the rule we set in the room with him. Only good things can come from him.
And are there other good things to come from him?
Yeah. We did fundraising straight away. So when we kind of told people around us, obviously, but then like you kind of got to tell the whole, I've done my little Facebook post about having twins. I was like, we can't just ignore it now and pretend we're all just at home together. So we did a little fundraiser, Just Giving page, to say that it had happened. And then we've just tried to do nice things around his name. So we've done, like, Robson and Marathon and Three Peaks with all his football team did it.
And who's it raising money for? Is it for the hospital?
Call the Neonatal Unit. Yeah. And then also Embrace, who were the people who, I mean, we could raise money for so many people, though. Because Forget Me Not, who were the children's hospital in Huddersfield, they turned up, like, on the day in Bradford and were like, we'll look after you. We'll help you with everything. So they, like, just little things like they went to Leeds and got the death certificate for us. So, I mean, there's millions more people that we're going to have to fundraise for forever.
That's just little things. Keep
exactly, yeah. I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah.
We've done things like make little bags for the hospital, like for parents who go in. And just little things like we've got a tree instead of a grave at Yorkshire Sculpture Park. So, like, if we just want a nice day out, it's a Jessie day.
Mm.
We've kind of just made it. We only do nice things if it's for Jessie. Hopefully we'll carry it on forever. I don't think we will never not.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me about it.
Thank you for having
apart me. From making me cry.
Sorry.
God.
Sorry.
But no, thank you. I feel like I don't even know what to say. I feel like I'm overwhelmed with almost like I feel so sad, but I'm almost like I kind of admire you, and particularly what you were saying about Matilda, that you have managed to turn something so sad into something so positive.
Thank you. I hope he carries on being like that, and I think he will. I think that's the point.
Yeah.
Where we say he was supposed to change the world, and he just didn't need as long as everybody else to do it.
Honestly, I felt like I needed a lie down after doing the interview with Becky, like I needed to snuggle up under a duvet and not speak to anyone for a while, because it was so emotional. But do you know what? Some of the emotion was actually not happy tears, because obviously it was a really sad thing that happened. But the fact that she can look at some of it in such a positive way, I thought was amazing.
Yeah, I felt exactly the same. I really cried. And I was driving, so I definitely couldn't stop and have a lay down when I was listening to it.
Yeah, I warned you because I sent it to you and I was like, hold on to your hats.
Yeah, no, really emotional. But I think, isn't it so lovely that she talks about her daughter and the way that she looked at it?
I said to her, I'll never be able to look at the moon in the same way again now. I'll think of all of them every time I see the moon.
I know. And I'm not going to cry talking about it now. That is, children are amazing at stuff like that. They just see, I mean, obviously as they get older, they're going to have more questions and realise that, you know, the practicalities of living on the moon are probably slightly different. But I just love that. And the fact that it's helped them get through it is just so... Yeah.
Do you know one of the things, though, that Becky said to me after we'd done the interview was that she feels like people who are either trying to get pregnant or are pregnant or have new babies, she feels like they almost don't want to be around her because of what happened. And that made me really sad. And actually, after doing the interview, don't get me wrong, it does make me feel like, crikey, you know, if I do have a baby, the things that could go wrong could be awful. But then also, like I say, at least there, like for her, there is that kind of positive to have come from it.
Yeah, and she's got two precious children that are probably ever more precious because of what's happened to her.
True. Are you going to ask me my percentage?
Yeah. What's your percentage this
week? I don't know. I think my percentage, to be honest, my percentage is still the same. So I'm still high. I'm still 90-10. But it's flipping scary, isn't it?
Absolutely petrifying. I can't even imagine especially today when I said at the beginning I was feeling emotional, it makes you even more emotional because obviously all the memories of giving birth, and I just cannot imagine going through that.
Well, here's the upside. Next week's episode is somebody sticking a thing up my thing so we can see how many follicles and eggs are in there. So that's going to lighten the mood next week.
I cannot wait to hear about someone sticking a thing up your thing. It's what I've always wanted to talk about with you, sister.
Follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media. We are at To Baby or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it massively help us out, but it'll guarantee that you can time your pregnancy for immediately after your wedding day. Join me next time when I try to decide whether to baby or not to baby.
On the next To Baby or Not to Baby.
82% will conceive in the first year of trying. By the end of 2 years, 92% will have conceived. After a year of trying, it's reasonable to investigate.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.